You are listening to Waiting on Reparations, a production of iHeartRadio.
Yo. Yo, this is shit to bring Bushwick eye back. Torture all these rappers on some bullshit. I rack five stacks as you get devoured by my fly trap. I'm so dope, you can find crackle in my spine tap. Beyond that, I'm like a candle to raw. First person talking slick, catch a mandible claw. Package it raw, y'all wasn't spitting enough. Gripping the pump since Pippin could dunk. I'm just a rhythmless punk. Still I'm spitting like a fully automatic. Handle any bastard or a bully wanting static. Hardest on the planet, harder than some granite. I don't want synthetic, smoking all organic.
Hey,
y'all.
Hey, what's up?
I am Dope Knife.
I am Lingua Franca.
We are waiting on reparations.
Hurry up.
I'm hot.
Woo. What's good with you?
Nothing.
No, you first.
I've been doing mad interviews, yo. Like, I've got this song that I've been telling y'all about that's coming out on Friday, and
yeah,
called So 912, and I'm really excited about it. It's like my Savannah hometown song. So in preparation, I have been doing a lot of interviews.
Excellent.
Did a podcast called The Riff the other night.
Mm-hmm.
And I did my homie Teyamu Denku, who's a rapper from Milwaukee. I did his podcast, the Taking Apart the Passion podcast. It's been fun. Yeah, I think I'm starting to get kind of like an interview character down intact. So
is how similar to your rap character, like on stage? I feel like you're pretty much the same person, but
I think my interview, when I say interview character, I guess I just mean, you know, I feel like a lot more open when I'm asking people questions, but when I'm getting interviewed, I feel like I've been kind of stiff in the past. But now I'm just opening up and telling, you know, jokes that I tell when I have regular conversations with people. So I feel they went well. In any event, I just like got off of an hour long conversation about like my bio and stuff like that. So I'm feeling really loosey goosey.
Oh, so you loosened up?
Yeah. No, I'm loose. I'm ready to talk. I'm ready to talk that shit.
Yeah, let's talk that shit. So today we're going to talk about the legal concept of self-defense, which is being invoked in several high profile trials right now. The McMichael family has claimed self-defense in the murder case of Ahmaud Arbery, which is taking place in South Georgia this week. Kyle Rittenhouse also invoked self-defense for the killing of two BLM protesters in Kenosha, Wisconsin last summer during his trial that has been going on. It's actually wrapping up this week. But when are Black people allowed to invoke self-defense, if at all? This week, we'll discuss highlights from both trials. This week, we'll discuss highlights from both trials, their implications, as well as some lesser-known legal cases of self-defense in the world of hip-hop.
Just to recap, what are your thoughts generally on the Kyle Rittenhouse trial? Last time that we talked about the Kyle Rittenhouse trial directly on this show, I think it had to have been a year ago. At this point,
probably right after it happened.
Yeah, exactly. Like maybe even over. So, I mean, the last time that we delved into this case, I mean, they still thought that a flaming object was thrown at him.
Yeah.
And all that sort of stuff.
What are your
general thoughts on it now?
Yeah, I think he came up last. It was October 21st of last year is when we had our guns episode. And okay, we talked a little bit about Kyle Rittenhouse. The catchier headlines, I guess, that have drawn my eye over the course of this trial have pertained to the improprieties of the judge, who is very clearly skewed in favor of Rittenhouse. Anything from allowing him to draw the pieces of paper on which were written the juror's name to determine who would actually partake in the verdict deciding proceedings. I'm sure there's a technical term for that. I don't care.
Didn't the nigga's phone go off and it was the Trump phone campaign?
Well, that was the lawyer. That was also like egregious. The judge had the jury clap for one of the witnesses for the defense because he was a veteran and it was Veterans Day. And going all the way back to they were deciding what evidence was or what, you know, what was allowed in the courtroom, declaring that the people Rittenhouse killed We're not allowed to be called victims, but we're allowed to be called rioters and looters if the defense could present evidence that that was true.
So pretty much the judges turned this case into a farce, pretty much.
Effectively.
And I mean, the thing that makes it so striking is that the Ahmaud Arbery case is going on simultaneously. So,
which I have heard conspiracy theories that is on purpose.
Like, what do you mean?
Because most people are talking about the Rittenhouse trial. The Ahmaud Arbery trial is not receiving the same level of public scrutiny. And that will make it if the McMichaels and their friend get off. Oh. Sorry, I got spooked because Paul just fucking came out of nowhere. If the McMichaels and their friend get off, then there won't be as much hullabaloo because people will not have noticed because they weren't following it.
I mean,
I don't believe it, but I mean,
I don't know if that's coordinated, but I think I might have to play a little bit of devil's advocate just in that point. Not that you were making that point, but the Kyle Rittenhouse case is more ambiguous and nuanced, and there's a lot of more moving pieces in it, which is why I think it's a bigger story. Just from like a pure, like, what drives ratings and what drives eyeballs to click on stuff. Something that's a more, you know, just kind of dark and macabre, but something that seems like it's more of a coin toss is going to be more exciting for people to consume, like, as a news story. I think with what people do know about the Ahmaud Arbery case, I mean, and who knows, people may be shocked. Some people may be shocked if those guys get off, but I think everyone is more or less expecting those guys to go down.
We will see.
And therefore, I think that's why it might not be. But, you know, you never know. I mean, you know, the Kyle Rittenhouse case is like a young white kid that's, you know, maybe that's what's attracting the eyeballs. But I don't know. I do know that striking comparison is going to make it that if those two outcomes, if the outcomes that at least I expect are going to happen, which is that Rittenhouse walks and the McMichaels go down, I think that it's going to, I don't know, it's going to cause like I don't even know what it's going to cause, but I just know there's not going to really be any sort of way that you can look at the Rittenhouse trial coming out of that and think that it just isn't, you know, tarred with like shenanigans and fuckery because of what the judge is doing.
Effectively. But yeah, we'll get into all that and more after the jump. Okay, we're back. And for those who have not been obsessively watching the news over the last 2 weeks, closing arguments were heard Monday for the murder trial of Kyle Rittenhouse, who at 17 years old on August 25th, 2020, crossed state lines with an illegal firearm to take the streets of Kenosha, Wisconsin, during the protests against the shooting of Jacob Blake by a police officer days earlier. Using an AR-15 type rifle, he killed Joseph Rosenbaum, 36, Anthony Huber, 26, and wounded Gage Grosskreutz, 27, during the street demonstrations. Rittenhouse is now 18 and has been charged with 5 felony counts and a misdemeanor weapons charge that I think has subsequently been dropped.
Yeah, this judge.
There's like a loophole. Da, 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 da. But the felonies include 1 count of first degree reckless homicide, 2 counts of first degree recklessly endangering safety, and 2 counts of first degree intentional homicide, saying that he on purpose tried to kill, or no, did kill Anthony Huber and Joseph Rosenbaum. So if convicted of the homicide charges, Rittenhouse will spend the rest of his life in prison.
Now, Rittenhouse claimed that he was there as a medic to protect stores from looters. Interestingly enough, the little punk-ass bitch medic did not attempt to render any aid to the people he claims he shot in self-defense. The video presented in the trial shows the bystanders rendering aid to Rosebaum after he was shot in the head by Rittenhouse. He then ran away after he shot Grosskreutz in the arm. A live stream captures Grassroots yelling for a medic, but the clip shows Rittenhouse walking away from the scene as an armored vehicle drives by him and people nearby yell he shot them. At the trial, he also admitted that he falsely claimed to be a certified EMT the night of the shooting.
But his legal team is claiming self-defense. His lawyer, John Pierce, stated in a video posted to Twitter last year, if this is not self-defense for Kyle Rittenhouse under these circumstances, then no one can protect themselves. No one can protect their family, and no one can protect their country. Now, which I just think has so many implications to it.
Okay, like, we all know that's like typical fucking NRA gun jargon talk. So we all know that's bullshit. The thing that I kind of want to like think about is like, I think that the wrong argument to have about the Kyle Ritt, or not even the wrong argument to have, because the case is about self-defense, but in terms of what we want to point out, I think we should be attacking more the idea of why he was there in the first place. You know, and because at the end of the day, somebody did, you know, at the end of the day, people did come at him. So it's like, even though I think that he's guilty or whatever, I think we can all like be adults. We can all understand that, you know, this is a jury, the judge fucking around, Wisconsin, one black juror, all that shit. We can pretty much guess that he's gonna get off, right?
Presumably.
So like, why? I mean, I don't even understand if there's any like even like legal direction that you can go, but I just don't understand like why that wasn't a focus of the case. It's like, why is a fucking 17-year-old walking around with a gun? Why is he going into like a crowd of people with a gun?
What I think is interesting about this quote from John Pierce is he says, no one can protect themselves, no one can protect their family. And when I think about just the phrase Black Lives Matter in this context, and you know, particularly in the context of some of the cases we'll look at later, that you, if you are no one to this country, then no, you cannot protect yourself. If this country regards you as a nobody, no, you cannot protect your family. And that's effectively what oftentimes is the case for Black people. Think about, for example, in the case of Breonna Taylor, who's, you know, had her boyfriend had their house broken into by unannounced intruders who happened to be plainclothes police officers. And despite being a licensed gun owner who just thought someone was breaking in and shot at them, Walker was charged with attempted murder of a police officer because his life, I mean, like, you know, we say Breonna Taylor's name, but his life didn't matter either. He was no one. So no, he could not protect his family, and no, he could not protect his home. So I feel like it's like what he's kind of, like, that aspect of what he's saying kind of rings true. It's like, but not in the way he means, and that it has different implications for like who actually is allowed self-defense in the country.
Now, the thing about the Rittenhouse case, do you think that the Rittenhouse case is more of an issue of race and less of an issue of politics?
I think it is more an issue of politics.
Because, I mean, some people are under the impression that Kyle Rittenhouse went out and shot a bunch of black people, and he didn't.
No, he did not.
Like, he shot three.
But
white
if you
guys.
Are if you are in defense of black lives, if you are, you know, antagonistic to white supremacy, you are also a second class citizen. Your life doesn't matter either. That's why I think so many Republican state legislatures have tried to or successfully advance legislation to pretty much legalize vehicular homicide in the case of protesters blocking the streets and acts of civil disobedience. Yeah. Like, if you side with these folks that we have deemed disposable, you're disposable too.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess that's, yeah, it's right. Because I don't know, is that like a political, or is that like a amongst racialized? Because like something in me tells me that if Kyle Rittenhouse was like a Candace Owens type Trump supporter,
mm-hmm.
that the right would still be galvanizing around them in the sense of like, you killed our enemy. Our perceived enemy, so we love you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I feel like that. I feel like that's the, you know, I feel like the Kyle Rittenhouse case has more of a connection with the killing of, what was his name, Michael Rhino,
yeah,
in Portland. You know, it feels like a very politically motivated situation. You know, the judge, the defense lawyers, they feel like it feels like it's part of like a MAGA movement thing.
Yeah.
You know,
that makes sense.
That's the aspect of it that's got me scared, because it's like, you know, Kyle Rittenhouse getting off or getting, you know, if he's found not guilty, this is going to, just like with the, you know, running over protest things, this is like the new template for how to deal with these things now.
I mean, I think what you're getting at reminds me a lot of what Michelle Alexander said, the new Jim Crow, about the collateral damage of the prison industrial complex and mass incarceration. That effectively, if continued subjugation of people of color requires sweeping some working class whites up into the same web, then fine. That collateral damage is totally acceptable because white supremacy is so critical to uphold. And so I see a parallel here in that I think, yes, what you're saying about it being political left and right, et cetera, is salient.
Not that the racial aspect isn't like irrelevant. I just declare.
Yeah, it's just like this. It's once again the criminal justice system saying, like, if you come in defense of black lives, you are also disposable. If you are a black person, you are disposable. If you are fighting fascism, like Michael Reinhold, which inherently means standing up for like marginalized peoples, even if you weren't necessarily in, I don't know, like physically defending someone's life, but ideologically are aligned with that struggle, you are disposable. We will shoot you dead in the street without even holding a trial.
And if you love Trump, then please kill as many people as you can.
Right, which I think is the broader, will be the broader impact of what happens in this trial, is like, are, you know, fascist white right-wing people emboldened to defend their country? Oh, by which they mean just gun down leftists if they at all feel threatened by them.
Oh, I don't think that that's even up in question. The next whether it's even, it might even be like outside of that courtroom, but the next time that there's like a big protest, and the next time that it has to do with like some left right Black Lives Matter or something like that, there's gonna be a lot of Proud Boys like there with guns, ready to instigate some shit.
Yep.
Yeah. So
we shall see. But getting back to some of the details of the trial, claims of self-defense abound on both sides, in a sense. Both Rittenhouse and Grosskreutz, the lone survivor of the shootings, are claiming to have defended themselves. On trial, when he was up on the stand, Rittenhouse said he reacted to seeing Grosskreutz's handgun, though he had already shot and killed two people. Grosskreutz explained to the court that he had pulled out the handgun because he thought that Rittenhouse was an active shooter. So on both sides, they're talking about defending themselves or defending other people.
Rittenhouse claims that the shooting happened because he was cornered by several...
The first shooting.
Sorry, what happened?
The first shooting? Yeah.
Okay, Rittenhouse claims the first shooting happened because he was cornered by several protesters, one of whom had a gun. One of his victims, Anthony Huber, pursued him after the first shooting and struck Rittenhouse in the head and neck with a skateboard before being shot. During his tearful testimony, Rittenhouse claimed one of the victims could have run away instead of trying to take his gun. By that logic, if he had felt his life was endangered by the unarmed people he gunned down, couldn't he have just fled?
Yeah, and so like it does get sort of nebulous, where it's like, he felt threatened because he was cornered by several protesters, one of whom did have a gun. The person he shot was unarmed, but he felt, you know, he felt scared because he was being closed in on all sides. And then, you know, you got Anthony Huber, who was killed, who could arguably, you know, Rittenhouse had a gun, so he's acted in self-defense by hitting him in the head and neck with a skateboard. But Rittenhouse, you know, is claiming that he shot him because he was hitting him in the head with a skateboard. And so it just goes back and forth and trying to determine who legally is allowed to defend themselves.
Yeah. I need to just like completely focus on this case, because like my mind keeps wondering to what is going to happen next time, which then in my head is making this one not seem as bad as it could have been. Because I do think that the next guy, if the next Kyle Rittenhouse wannabe is like struck with the skateboard, they're just going to start emptying off shells into the crowd. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I guess like there's a part of me that's like, well, he didn't do that. You know what I'm saying? It's like the low expectations.
And yeah. The verdict is expected this week, perhaps even before the show airs. And as we've, you know, made clear up to this point, I'm pretty sure he's going to get off.
I mean, if they're taking away that gun charge, you know, then yeah, I don't see him facing any consequences for this, unfortunately.
So we shall see. Maybe this will air the same day that the verdict is announced, and that will put a very interesting shading on this whole episode that you are listening to.
The Ahmaud Arbery case.
Right? Yeah, let's move on to look at a little bit of this. We got Travis McMichael and Greg McMichael, who said they armed themselves and sped after Ahmaud Arbery, who was out jogging, because they thought he was a burglar. I wonder why. And they said they wanted to catch him and hold him, you know, perform a citizen's arrest until the police arrived. When Arbery turned and fought during the chase, Travis McMichael says that he shot him in self-defense. So they chased him down, and when he defended himself by allegedly attempting to grab the gun away from Travis McMichael, Travis shot him. But now, they're saying that they were defending themselves against the man they were chasing. That was unarmed?
I mean, it's like literally the Trayvon Martin situation.
Precisely, chasing somebody down, and when they defend themselves.
You chase somebody, you start a fight, you're getting cooked in the fight, so you have a gun, so then you shoot them.
Right. I feel like what you said earlier is true, that this is who is the aggressor in the situation is far more clear cut, though we will see ultimately what the jury has to say.
And that's all I meant, is just like if the jury, like, they've already caught the original DA in fuckery with this case, you know what I mean? So it's like all I mean is if the jury should come back with a bullshit verdict about this, I think from a almost, you know what I mean, I think like a general consensus will be like, all right, that was fuckery. We identify that as fuckery. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whereas with the Kyle Rittenhouse case, you know, like I said, I think there's definitely people who are not in the tank for MAGA or Kyle Rittenhouse who look at the situation and was like, I mean, you know, somebody did like try to hit him, or somebody did corner or whatever. Yeah, I mean, there's people, it's just a lot easier for people to rationalize the Kyle Rittenhouse situation, I guess, than the Ahmaud Arbery case, which really seems, you know, again, it like really seems like, you know, some 19, like when I first heard this story, I was like, oh man, this is some 1950s, you know, like civil rights era story that you hear about some fucking Southern Yahoos chasing down a black kid. And
well, yeah. So, okay. So get this. They cited the citizen's arrest law, which itself was approved in 1863 to round up escaped slaves and was later used to justify the lynching of black people. So utilizing that as a defense for why they pursued and attacked Arbery, even if they hadn't killed him, it was fucked up. They were using it for exactly what it was meant for.
It's like stalking and shit.
Rounding up black people. This is the state law that was on the books at the time.
A private person may arrest an offender if the offense is committed in his presence or within his immediate knowledge. If the offense is a felony and the offender is escaping or attempting to escape, a private person may arrest them upon reasonable and probable grounds of suspicion. Well, how do you even determine that?
So, I mean, let's get at the committed in his presence, which it wasn't, or within his immediate knowledge. He didn't, like, he...
It wasn't.
Which it wasn't. Anyway.
He didn't see the tape.
Didn't see the tape. He had heard about burglaries happening in the area, but there was no, like, evidence that it was Arbery other than, I guess, just running while black was enough for them.
Yeah.
But anyway, the law was repealed last year, effectively repealed by Governor Brian Kemp or no, it's earlier this year, actually, partially in response to Arbery's killing. But even though the repeal law has taken effect, the defense is still able to cite this old racist law since it was in effect at the time of Arbery's slaying. So, you know, they were invoking it at the time to justify their actions. And so they're still able to, like, bring it up in court as something that would have been legal in that moment. Oh, man. I mean, and there's this saying that when Travis McMichael raised his shotgun, he was hoping to de-escalate the situation.
Yo.
And that's what his defense attorney said. But Arbery turned towards him, swinging aggressively with his fists. Like
Travis McMichael. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I just like, if you're allowed to invoke self-defense, if you believe that you're going to be killed or like gravely injured, how the fuck is it commensurate to wave a shotgun at someone and just like trying to engage in fucking fisticuffs? Like,
because I mean, like, what if Ahmad had gotten the gun away from them?
And that's their argument they're starting to make. Like, oh, well, we defended ourselves because if he had gotten the gun from us, he would have killed me.
Well, I mean, I guess that's the point that I'm making. Like, what if he had gotten the gun off of them? And
wouldn't that be
self-defense?
I think for whom?
For Ahmad Arbery. Wouldn't that have been self-defense?
In the Rittenhouse trial as well, he on the stand, I believe, claimed that he shot because he was scared that he was going to have his gun taken away. But I was like, well,
but at least with Rittenhouse, like, we, you know, at least in his defense, we actually can see like a videotape of him on the ground, not shooting anybody, being kicked and hit, and then he shoots somebody. So, I mean, like I said, whatever the problems are, that at least that you can see. You know what I mean? In this case with the Ahmad Arbery, it's like you're watching the shit like he's the protagonist of the story. So it's like you want him to not die. And the only way that can happen is if he defends himself and gets the gun off of those guys and kills them.
Yes. I don't know. Fucking. Oh, man. But anyway, so.
Don't fucking stalk people with.
Just don't stalk people
shit
with guns.
Shit makes me upset.
It does. Yeah. Travis McMichael, his father, Gregory McMichael, and their pal, William Roddy Bryan Jr., are charged with malice and felony murder for the killing of Arbery in Brunswick, Georgia, February of last year. They also face charges for aggravated assault, false imprisonment, and a criminal attempt to commit a felony. And they have all pleaded not guilty, though if convicted, each man could face life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Now, ultimately, the jury will have to consider the moments before the shotgun blast rang out and decide which man was the aggressor and therefore not legitimately acting in self-defense. 11.
Given that 11 of the 12 jurors in what is, you know, I'll give them this. It's majority white Glenn County.
But it's 25% black. Like 11 out of 12.
It's not a proportion.
Not representative of 25% black.
Yeah. Like, so while it makes a lot, it does seem a lot more clear cut to us. I don't 11 of the 12 jurors are white in South Georgia, bro.
And his defense lawyer is wild. And I don't know if y'all have heard about this, but okay. So Ahmad Arbery's family met with Al Sharpton, right?
Yeah.
And the defense attorney was making a big deal about that because he was like, yeah, man, Al Sharpton is intimidating, blah, 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 the jury, blah, blah, blah. Then Jesse Jackson came to visit. And, like, the defense attorney was straight up like, I think we've had enough black pastors involved in this situation here.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Black pastors.
Yeah. So that's what we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know. At least, like I said, it would be one thing. That's just the defense attorney. So the defense attorney is going to defend their client and shit like that. But
they're going to do whatever. They're going to pull all the stops. Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to pull all the stops. Out.
And let's not forget that the McMichaels and Brian were not even charged at first. Mm-hmm. In fact, in August, a grand jury indicted former Glenn County District Attorney Jackie Johnson, accusing her of showing favor and affection to one of the men now charged with Arbery's killing. and for directing police officers not to arrest another suspect. So pretty much like burying the tape that we have all now seen and saying like, oh, no, they're free to go. It's cool.
And I hate that I forget this, but did this only come to light? Because I know it happened before.
Right. So Floyd. So Arbery was killed in February. And I think in March, right around when Breonna Taylor's killing kind of blew up, also belatedly, is when the tape of, yeah, Ahmaud getting shot came out and people started losing their shit.
So yeah, like they were. I mean, there's a good chance that if George Floyd hadn't died, then this trial
might not even be happening. Yeah,
yeah, like that never even would have been a thing.
Yeah. Speaking of which, so like, you know, but going back to Breonna Taylor, Walker was her boyfriend was charged immediately with attempted murder of a police officer, and the charges were only dropped after months of advocacy and national media attention, much like how the McMichaels were only arrested and brought to trial because of huge public pressure. And so if we have to mount historic collective action just to get the justice system to do what it is supposed to do, what in the literal fuck is it for? Just think on that. Just wonder. We'll give you time. Yeah. Consider the killing of DeMarcus Carter in Summerlin, Nevada in the spring of 2012. A resident of a majority white neighborhood suspected Carter of trying to break in and shot and killed Carter, who was unarmed. The killer claimed self-defense, and his claim was never evaluated by a jury because police and prosecutors saw the claim of self-defense as strong enough not to even warrant a charge. The killer told police that he saw Carter outside his back door, believed Carter was breaking into his home, shot him dead. And unlike the death of Trayvon Martin in Florida only a month earlier, Carter's death received very little media coverage, and none of the coverage raised any questions about the validity of the killer's self-defense claim. And so I bring this up because I feel like this happens a lot more often than we realize. But
for sure. I mean, most of the names that we say today were taken in the name of self-defense, albeit by police officers. So Michael Brown, Eric Gardner, Jordan Davis, Tamir Rice,
Walter Scott, Philando Castile,
Alton Sterling, Botham Jean,
Stephen Clark, Laquan McDonald, the list goes on and on.
Now, there was a case recently where a man, I do believe that this one was in Florida, but a guy got convicted of murder because he some teens broke into his house and he killed them.
Oh, yeah.
But investigators were able to go back and pretty much essentially see that he created what they described as like a deer trap, pretty much.
Oh, what the fuck?
For these kids to walk into.
Yo, like,
with
what?
With bait and everything. They've got recordings of him, like, talking to them, like, as they died, which pretty much what sealed his fate is how they know that it was premeditated. But
that
he was actually
dark.
He tried to give a self-defense stand your ground thing, but they were just able to see with his elaborate Home Alone style, like, trap, that it was premeditated.
No. Yo, that's so insane. I had heard about that story. I didn't realize that. God damn.
Yeah.
It got even darker. Trap. Yeah. Jesus Christ. Well, so, getting into a bit of thinking about like
self-defense law.
Right? Yeah, particularly like with the Ahmaud Arbery case. I read this article recently by Eddie Rolnick in the Cardozo Law Review, which maps the relationships between residential segregation, violence, and criminal law. So, like, effectively, in a sense, the McMichaels were enforcing what they believed to be... I mean, they were enforcing residential segregation. It's no longer a matter of redlining or, you know, discriminatory home loans or restrictive covenants saying who can't live in certain houses. All of that got wiped out, supposedly. So now, like, there's a lot of cases, like with DeMarcus... What's his name? Sorry. DeMarcus Carter, like with... Ahmaud Arbery, where you have people, you know, invoking self-defense to violently and, you know, enforce who is and who is not allowed to be in certain areas. And Rolnick says, while the laws governing stranger self-defense are facially race neutral, self-defense is assessed only according to whether the defendant's fear is reasonable to the reviewing prosecutor, judge, and jury. Research on unconscious bias and cultural myths about criminality demonstrate that fear is racially contingent. One factor that can support both subjective and objective assessments of threat is whether a person looks out of place, making a Black person in a white neighborhood even more likely to be the object of fear.
The laws create a framework that legitimizes white fear of strangers who look racially out of place and condones violence based on that fear. The framework in turn helps normalize neighbor-on-neighbor surveillance, police state. Even if a person is not actually threatened or afraid, she can invoke the framework of fear-based racial out-of-placeness and can expect the police or the jury will be sympathetic.
And so I feel like this relates to the case of that bird watcher in Central Park or wherever, where the lady, the white lady calls the cops on him because, like, what are Black bird watchers? I think of in my own neighborhood, this gentleman who I ran into the gas station who tearfully, described having lived on the street down the street from my old house, who was out walking with his walking stick. And someone called the cops on him because they thought he had a weapon. And he got surrounded by cop cars in the neighborhood where he had always grown up, where he'd always lived. But that is gentrifying. And so, white people coming in and making claims to these spaces and using, racial out of placeness to invoke either state violence or in themselves using violence in order to enforce the new segregation. But yeah, this all comes back to some fundamental questions. Can Black Americans exercise their Second Amendment right to bear arms? Can we stand our ground? Can we claim self-defense in shooting someone who threatens us with physical harm? Does the Castle Doctrine, which grants a person the right to use deadly force to protect their home from an intruder, apply to us?
I mean, obviously the answer is no, at least not fully. Or at least whatever. I mean, whatever it is, it's not a definitive yes to any of those questions.
I think that if you look at the criminal justice system as a cascade of decision points, I think that at various ones along that in that waterfall that it's that terminates in imprisonment, there the answer is no. So whether or not a prosecutor decides to pull it, press charges. In the case of DeMarcus Carter, they didn't even choose to press charges against the man who killed him. But you bet your ass, a lot of fucking Black people are getting prosecuted for crimes that others aren't even, or just walking away with murder. Then there's getting to trial, and then what if you have an all white, 11 out of 12 of your jurors are white? If you don't have great legal representation because you can't afford it, and at that point, someone can easily decide, and more often than not, decide no, you weren't allowed. Yeah. Not to mention just like your initial interaction with the cops, in the case of Ahmaud Arbery, who showed up to the scene. And the guy, one of the McMichaels was a former police officer. They probably also thought it was sketchy that there was a Black guy jogging in a white neighborhood. And we're like, well, free to go. So at all these various points, the answer is generally no. And if it's not no at the, if it's not no at the end, it's still no in the middle or no at the beginning or no at some point. No.
What do you think about the, the common denominator in all of these situations, which is guns and people owning them and perhaps being a bit too overzealous with them?
I have complicated feelings about guns. And we've talked about this on the show before, where gun control laws are historically racist as well. Again, determining, who can and cannot bear arms, not being applied uniformly across the races. So any attempts to bar people from owning guns, ultimately, disproportionately impacting, honestly, folks that need them. Because I think guns will always exist around. I'll get I'll, you know, go ahead and get to the story. The other day I was out in like the hood near my house, and me and a couple other dudes were like out just greeting kids as they got on the school bus, because there'd been a lot of fighting on the school bus lately. So we were just like talking to them, hyping them up for their day, da 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 da. And so as I'm walking around this like housing project with this dude, he told me a story of his brother who had served a lengthy jail sentence for drug dealing, had been out in the streets, getting in fights with people. He was a big kingpin. People knew him. He had a lot of enemies. Got out of jail. He's a felon, so he couldn't own a gun anymore. Shot and killed by rivals on the day that he left jail. So the people who live in, I mean, like, okay, I guess you could say, oh, well, if you take all the guns off the street, then people aren't shooting each other. Well, there'd be a legal market for anything always. And so saying certain kinds of people can't have guns, like felons who do live in dangerous and violent areas or have dangerous and violent connections, they can't defend themselves if they can't get guns.
Well, I mean, I don't want to make the conversation stray too far into guns and stuff like that.
Because yeah, we'll circle back around to that.
But yeah. I just feel like, man, you know, every time the gun stuff comes up, it's like, I just feel like if the government, whoever is in power, like really felt to themselves like tomorrow, all right, this gun stuff is out of control, then I just feel like it would be really hard to get a hold of a gun. Like if they wanted you to, you know, I don't understand how people see all these fucking wild ass conspiracies for like everything. But then the fact that it's just like there aren't any, there's like barely any gun laws, and there's like just guns are just flowing through the country like Skittles. Like everyone like looks at that like, ah, there's no conspiracy there. That's definitely not, they want us all to kill each other. Like 100%. That's not what's happening. You know what I mean?
There could be an element of that. I don't know.
I haven't really thought about it
from that, through that lens very much. But
I'm sorry to digress.
It's all good. We digressed real hard. But let's jump down and talk a little bit about a couple of famous stories from hip hop.
Is this going to be technically the music discussion?
No, we got a couple songs for y'all at the end. But first, there's the story of Shine. He was a Belizean-born rapper on Diddy's label in the 1990s. You remember him?
Yeah, I remember Shine.
Yeah, so last year he opened up on the Fat Joe show about his 1999 club shooting. Diddy and Shine were at a nightclub in Manhattan, and they spotted some other rappers with whom they had a little bit of beef. Their interaction was fine at first, but then it turned into an argument, and Shine thought he saw one of the other men reach for a gun, so he reached for his and began firing, arguably to defend himself and his friends. Shine told Fat Joe he feared for his life, and to this day maintains that he did what he had to do to protect his people. Diddy and Shine were tried in separate trials. I guess, like, I don't know, Diddy, I can't remember if he was, like, assaulted the guy, if, like, hands got thrown, or just yelling. But needless to say, Diddy had the best lawyers and was ultimately acquitted of all charges. Shine, on the other hand, was found guilty on 2 counts of assault, reckless endangerment, and gun possession, and was sentenced to 10 years in prison. It was later, actually, when he got out, deported to his home country of Belize. And in a random turn of events that is weirdly relevant to the show, Shine was elected to the Belizean House of Representatives in the 2020 general election.
I'm trying
happy
to look
ending
it,
to the story.
I'm trying to look it up now, but you know, I think Shine might have hit somebody in the club.
Did he?
I think he hit a girl. I don't know that for certain, but I just know that he got 10 years for a reason.
Oh, like, oh, he shot. No, I don't think he killed
I mean,
anyone.
No, not like, not like. You don't. Nobody got hit.
I don't think anybody got hurt. No, we just shot, and people started running, and so.
Okay.
Because if it would have been like homicide or some shit, if he killed somebody for sure.
Yeah, I don't think anybody died. I don't think anybody died. I could have swore that somebody got hit. Like,
hey, maybe. I don't remember exactly, but. Yeah. To this day, he says he, you know, had to do what he had to do, even though he was convicted and served 10 years in prison.
Yeah, I mean, What do you think about it? Like,
I think that if
I'm never in favor of people busting off in the crowds. I'm just not. That's fact.
If you're in a crowd of people, maybe don't start shooting.
Yeah, I'm just always gonna frown on that, man. I hate that whole notion of people thinking that their shit is more important. What they got going on is more important than everybody else's shit, and then when it leads to people getting like shot or hit by your drunk driving, so you know what I mean. Like, I just don't like that sort of shit. So,
yeah, I mean, I can't. I think, yeah. I mean, especially the reckless endangerment charge. Yeah. Like, even if he was defending himself, those people who were in the club that started running for their lives didn't do shit.
Exactly. They had nothing to do with what your beef was at all. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry. But if I'm not wrong and somebody did get shot, even if it was in the baby toe, that baby toe would have been there had your ass not started popping off. So.
Fact.
You know what I mean? And we can't forget the biggest crime that came out of that, which is that you made fucking J-Lo realize she was hanging around street niggas and her and Diddy broke up.
That's the true crime here. The fuck, man.
She was like, nah, this love cost a thing. I'm out.
you're crazy for that one. Anyway.
Let's talk about T.I. next. Rubber Band Man. All right. So T.I., who infamously got arrested by the ATF agents at the 2007 BET Hip Hop Awards, Tip was caught trying to buy machine guns, silencers, and other arms as he was a convicted felon, he couldn't legally acquire them. The rapper argued that the guns were for protection in the light of the murder of his best friend, Phelan Johnson, who in 2006 was gunned down in a van he and T.I. were riding in after a performance in Cincinnati.
So, I mean, there's like, so he's a felon, he can't have guns, but he has like a legit reason to be afraid of his life if his best friend just got fucking murdered in front of him a year before. But no, you can't defend yourself because you're a felon, so you can't have guns, so we're going to pick you up at the BET Awards. Kind of whack. I don't know.
It's whack. It's... I just wish that these stories are just more clear cut. Why was T.I. buying silencers?
He was scared.
Silencers, though. Like, silencers aren't I'm scared for my life. Silencers, I'm coming to get you, nigga. That's... Again, maybe I'm just getting hung up on that one detail. And yeah, you know, like, stop. Bad back. I don't want to get hung up on that one detail. But the story just hits me different if I'm reading T.I. was afraid for his life because his friend got killed and the cops went and picked him up while he was trying to buy machine guns. Then I'm like, oh,
have you ever bought something unnecessary because it made you feel better?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, and
I'm not saying he was like, yeah, I'm gonna drop them, like, you know, like real quiet. Nobody's gonna know. It's just like amassing what I would agree is an obscene amount of weaponry out of fear. Just like, I want all the shit. Give me all the shit. Give me all the machine guns. Give me all the silencers. I'll give me all the shit because I'm terrified.
Now, is there no aspect of their fame or perhaps how we feel about them as celebrities that might be influencing some of our views on that?
Oh, absolutely. I'm biased as hell.
Because I just mean, if Larry the Cable Guy, poor Larry the Cable Guy, I keep bringing him up in these analogies. But I feel like if Larry the Cable Guy got pulled over at the Country Music Awards with a pickup truck filled with fucking infrared beams and silencers and scopes and machine guns,
we would never hear about it.
I would be... Yeah,
the police would dap him up and fucking let him go, is what I'm saying.
But and that's fucked up on the police end. But I want to know about that because I'm like, damn, you know what? I don't like the idea of this rich fucking dude buying all these guns to circulate back in whatever fucking poor communities from.
Because I
don't know. But I mean, again, that's my bias. You know, just trying to give full disclosure. That could be my bias of like not believing that, you know, people need 37 guns to defend himself.
Yep.
And maybe just like four?
Maybe just like four. Speaking of defending yourself, once again, we talked a little bit about Trayvon earlier, but there's another somewhat infamous case of someone invoking the Florida Stand Your Ground law when in 2014, Jordan Davis got into a confrontation with a white man at a gas station in Florida who said Davis's rap music was too loud and ultimately fired shots into Davis's car, killing him. The man claimed he thought Davis had a gun, but the killer was eventually convicted of murder, and it was kind of beautiful. It was forgiven in court by Davis's mother, who went on to become a gun control advocate and then successfully run for Congress in Georgia's some district. I forgot. Seventh. Nope. Eighth. Nope. I don't remember. She's in Congress now doing some shit. She's getting that Bloomberg money and shit. Go get your paper, boo-boo. But,
so
but
she
like
became the, a gun control
advocate? Oh, yeah. She was like all with, you know, what's their names? You know, those,
Parkland kids.
No, those, you know, it's mostly white ladies. What are they called?
Oh, I know what you're talking about, like moms against
moms, men. Moms demand action.
Moms demand action.
Issues with them. Yeah. And so
I think it's important though. I mean, I don't even know if I want to say, I think the advocacy is important, but it's just like, you know, even in that situation, you've got the racial situation, you've got the, but at the end of the day, a fucking idiot who had a gun.
Yeah.
Was the thing. And it's just like you can change the scenario, you can change the races and genders of everybody. Like you can do everything. It all comes down to somebody having a gun that shouldn't have a gun. And that being the issue. Like that's a fucking
who should have guns.
That's a like a old white dude getting cussed out at the gas station.
Who should have guns?
I don't know. Obviously I don't have the book, the fucking answers as to who should be allowed to have the guns or stuff like that. But obviously, you know, in a country that's as big as this one, in a country that's as obsessed with like celebrity and notoriety and fame as the one that we live into, you know, I'm not saying who should have it or who shouldn't, but it's just like obviously this shit is meeting tragic results at this point.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And it's just like, it's just too many people dying needlessly from this shit.
Yeah, you're needlessly. Right though.
It obviously there's way broader discussions to be had. There's way more specific and nuanced discussions to be had about it. But again, you know, it's like just this case, we could talk about that situation with Jordan Davis, and we could get into like a real deep, interesting, meaningful racial conversation, right? And we can get into all these conversations out of this, but the one conversation that like is irrefutable is somebody had a gun that like obviously wasn't responsible for it, because like if you own a gun and you're capable of like getting into an argument with somebody, an argument, and then that makes you shoot them, then you shouldn't have had it. How about that? It's like those are the people that shouldn't have a gun.
I don't know, man. It's nuanced and shit. We'll do a whole episode on this sometime.
Yeah.
But for now, let's get to the fun part.
No,
you're good. Let's get into the music discussion. Got a couple great songs for y'all to see.
Let's take a little break before we do that, huh?
Okay, let's do it.
All right. We'll be back right after the jump with the music discussion. All right, we are back. Before I rudely cut off Mariah, my bad. I'm sorry.
Well, we're going to get into the music discussion. First up, talking about Self-Defense from Dilated Peoples off the album Expansion Team. Let's play a little bit of this real quick.
What the fuck could have provoked you? We don't know each other, kid, and I did not insult you. Don't make me feed the fish, feed the trees.
What I find interesting about particularly the first verse is Rocka seems to be like describing like an altercation, a physical altercation. I'm like, oh, what could have provoked you? Don't make me feed the fish, feed the trees, feed the vultures. Talking about, you know, responding with violence. But then he gets into, a block flows with strikes and strikes with blows. A slice flows with my mic, it shows. A counterattack and turn the tables in an instant. Move out of range and step close and step into the move out of range and step into the distance. Something like that. So it's actually, it morphs into seeming like he's using his verbal prowess to, in essence, de-escalate a conflict through moving it from physical altercation into a verbal, artistic even one, which I think was what a part of what like freestyle was initially meant to do, of like, all right, you got beef with somebody, bring it to the cipher. Like, all right, let's battle, talk shit, don't shoot each other, just come up here and just like, you know, talk smack about their mama or whatever.
Well, I mean, you know, forget the guns, but just like, you know, in America, there's a lot of people who walk around like that just accept that like using violence is like an actual like way to solve problems. You know what I mean? And yeah. I think something like with just the whole theme of the song is kind of like how unnecessary that is. You know what I mean? And I think that's what he's kind of what that section means to me, where it's like there's better ways to settle differences and to prove yourself, or like there's better ways to make yourself get the one up on somebody, and it's not necessarily like, yo, I'm gonna beat the shit out of him, or I'm gonna fucking shoot him or get into a fight or something like that. Like, you know, we're like thinking, breathing human beings that can do more than just like the fucking base level shit.
I'm going to go on somewhat of a tangent, but it matters. So I've been studying lately, and I may have brought this up on the show, sort of the way that gun violence has come to be seen by public health experts as an epidemic, and not just like, oh, in the sense of gun violence adversely impacts people's health because they're getting fucking shot, but actually starting to think about violence as a virus. So when you're exposed to violence, you then contract it, and then you spread it to other people by letting your trauma manifest in more violence against others. And so taking that framing and, you know, the way that we publicly have come to understand viruses throughout the pandemic, think about, all right, how do you stop the spread of this virus? You interrupt and de-escalate conflicts, and also change norms around conflict resolution. So getting out in the community and maybe getting us back to a place where we are using verbal jousting to sort of inject levity into our conflicts by like, all right, let's have a rap battle. Bringing us back to that rather than the place we are now where gun violence is almost fetishized.
Yeah, and it's gonna be so hard. I mean, especially from like a hip hop standpoint, to get back to that, because like I remember when you could listen to like a gangster rapper who talking about drive-bys and blah blah blah, but even then, like, you would hear like lines about how like, yo, we can put the guns down and I'll beat your ass, you know what I mean? And it's like, now, I mean, there's like two references in particular from like notable big rappers in songs where they're like, yeah, fuck that fighting shit, we just gonna kill you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like that's the flex. And it's just, you know, it's shit like that that make a motherfucker feel like, damn, am I like 67? Because that feels like super new. Like, what? That's what we're talking about? Like, motherfuckers is like literally rapping about how they're scared to fight and they would rather just shoot you.
Yeah. Another norm-shifting experiment that I read about recently, and if you give me a second, I'm going to try to actually bring up the details. Oh, this thing called Guns Down, Squabble Up in Los Angeles, where when people, there's like, oh, yo, I heard so-and-so is going to like come over and spray your spot. They go get the people and bring them to a place to box and have like a public boxing match between folks that are beefing, as a way to settle disputes without resorting to picking up guns. Cause it's like, you ain't like, it's kind of hard to kill a nigga by just like punching him in the head a lot. I mean, you can do it, but particularly if like a bunch of people are standing around watching y'all like fight, you know, you can like determine, oh shit, like this person won and walk away from it with nobody killed.
Yeah, I mean, if fights had any sort of like, you know, alarming rate of like people dying in like fist fights and scraps and altercations, then like, yeah, half the population would be dead right now. So it's like, from at least that standpoint, if two people get upset about each other for whatever reason, even if it's like, oh man, I hate you, I'm gonna grab this bat and come at you, it's just factually a less efficient way to kill someone. So yeah, the chances are that somebody's not going to die. Somebody might get hurt, somebody might get seriously injured and wounded, like, you know, so it's like, just, it's not like an issue for like the conservative straw mans of like, oh, what about a knife and you could kill, like, yeah, you can kill somebody with anything, but it's like, what makes it easier for you to kill someone? Like, you know.
And I know it feels like we're getting a little bit away from the topic of self-defense of the episode. Oh, yeah. I think this still matters, because if somebody kills your family member and you wonder if you're next and you decide to go get them first in retaliation, it is in essence a kind of self-defense, in that you fear for your life because of, you know, like surviving a shooting attempt or losing someone. And so figuring out how we resolve these squabbles without resorting to gun violence is still also addressing the question of how do we defend ourselves.
But with the self-defense, I mean, even the notion of self-defense in America as we understand it is something that's a derivative of our fear of guns. You know what I'm saying? Like, the dude who set up the deer trap thing that I was talking about, yeah, that was premeditated murder, but like, it was premeditated murder that he was like, it was a plot that he cooked up because he figured, man, if somebody breaks into your house, then I can acceptably say I feared for my life because they might have had a gun and been able to harm me, right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what it's all comes. If two people are getting a fight, Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin getting into a fight, Zimmerman being like, I feared for my life. Like, he can say that, and on one hand, it's like, oh, okay, well, he's fighting this guy, so he thought that the guy was going to get the upper hand. But then the other thing that goes into the mind of a jury that could acquit somebody like that is like, oh, well, I mean, it's America and there's 3 million guns out there, so maybe he thought that the person had a gun. And then that's a reasonable fear that you had. When cops pull people over and shoot them willy-nilly, it's because, you know, not giving any benefit of the doubt to cops, but I mean, one thing that cops can definitely have in their head that's a fact is like, A, anybody you pull over might have a gun. That's just a fact. By the nature of the country that we live in. So, you know, I think, like, even though we are trying, you know, I don't want to get us too far off of the self-defense thing, and this is about self-defense, I think that the gunplay in America definitely feeds into that.
Yeah.
Because, like, everybody's got self-defense laws.
And are just, like, ready for self-defense all the time.
Yeah.
But let's get into this next song, Quando Rondo's End of Story. So, Chicago rapper King Von was shot and killed outside a nightclub in Atlanta back in, when was it? October 2020, I believe. Allegedly after an altercation with Quando Rondo and his crew. So now, since then, Quando Rondo seems to have told his side of the story in his song, End of Story. So let's listen to it real quick.
Down right, we screaming self-defense. He shoulda never put his hands on.
Look at the foot.
That's all the evidence. See them pussy niggas shoulda ran up on.
Who the fuck?
So he, you know, he starts off accusing fans for acting like the police. He says, nowadays it's like the fans doing the police job. Y'all talk that gangster shit, but cry when a nigga get knocked. You supposed to walk it how you talk it, but shit, I still ain't got my point across. So he's sort of like talking about people who, you know, we're calling him out and, you know, you killed a nigga. Or, you know, being snitches, in essence. He goes on.
These guys really don't understand the concept of snitching and what it means. They use the word snitches like conservatives use cancel culture and wokeness. They just throw that shit around for anything. Like, all right.
Yeah. He goes on, he references Timothy Leeks, who was charged with felony murder in King Von's death. You know, defending him, saying, you know, we had to make it home. You know, I'm riding with little Timmy, right or wrong, and stuff like that. So saying pretty much that his friend who was charged with the murder of this other rapper was just defending them. He goes on, the next part, he actually encourages people to look
right
at...
Or wrong? I'm riding with...
Little riding Timmy, riding right or wrong, I think is what he says.
So even whether... So I'm translating that as whether or not he was justified in killing the guy in the fight or not. He was riding with his dog.
Yes, yeah. I mean, that's valid. Then he encourages people to look at the surveillance camera footage, which appears to show King Von initiating the conflict. He goes, "He's damn right. We scream in self-defense. Shouldn't have never put his hands on me. Look at the footage. That's all evidence. See them pussy niggas. Shouldn't have ran up on me." So again, alleging self-defense, saying that the other guy was the aggressor and they just tried to protect themselves.
I mean, it's going to be along the lines of what I was saying before, all throughout this, which is like, I mean, at the end of the day, it's all stupid shit, but like, I would have much rather that this had just been a fight between some rappers.
Well, I think what ends up happening is that one person isn't around to argue
their side of the
whether fence. Or not they were the aggressor.
And that's what happened when, remember when we covered the baby case, his shooting thing that he had years ago, is the same sort of situation where it's like you only hear one side of the story, and I'm walking around for years thinking, oh, okay, this is part of the legend of the baby, and then you find out, not even you find out, but it's just like you look more into the story and it's like, oh no, that person who died had a mother and a brother and a sister and witnesses of their own who all saw some different shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like it just really fucking makes me angry that like this can't just be a Jerry Springer situation where like one crew says we didn't start it and this crew says we didn't start it and a couple dudes got a fat lip and another guy has like a broken wrist or something like that and everybody went to booking and now they're outside beefing with each other on the internet and yada yada. Like, I would much rather it be that than, oh man, you shouldn't have touched me. Now it's time to cap. Like,
no. Yeah.
And again, like, homie might have been fearing for his life. Homie probably was fearing for his life. The reason he was fearing for his life is because he didn't know whether those motherfuckers had guns.
Yeah. The last song I want to talk about is, I think, I mean, like, a classic, Only God Can Judge Me by Tupac. No, yeah. Off of All Eyes on Me in 1996, and particularly this one line, and I think the, was it the first verse? Let's listen to it real quick.
Point. Ain't no such thing as self-defense in the court of laws or judges when we get to where we're going across. That's real.
So on the third verse, Rappin' for Trey says, ain't no such thing as self-defense in the court of law, so judges when we get to where we're going, wearing a cross. Starts off by saying, what's he say? Oh, yeah. Would you be wrong for bucking a nigga to the pavement? You gonna get me first. So if I don't get him, full started praying. Which I just thought that the part where he says, you know, ain't no such thing as self-defense in the court of law. So judges when we get to where we were in the cross. It's kind of a reversal of the line that, you know, people say, I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. Sort of implying since there's no justice in the system of criminal justice and judgment can only come in the afterlife, you might as well fucking pull guns, because if you die, you actually get judged fairly versus if you go to court.
Yeah.
which is so bleak.
It's ill because, like, I mean, you know, Tupac had a very, very notable self-defense case that he actually got off on the grounds of self-defense when he shot two police officers,
mm-hmm.
who were, you know, I mean, I guess if we're talking self-defense, they were unlawfully trying to harm him and he had to defend himself and he shot them. Oh, speaking of shooting cops, Bob Marley's I Shot the Sheriff.
Oh, yeah, I almost forgot this one. So
not a hip-hop song, but...
Not a hip-hop song, but nonetheless, very influential. It's the third track on side one of his 1973 album, Burnin'. And I didn't know this before. The song's actually apparently about birth control. Really? Did you know this?
No.
Okay, what? So Jamaican filmmaker and actress Esther Anderson, who was once Marley's girlfriend, said she helped Marley write the song and said the line in which Marley sings about Sheriff John Brown hating him and always wanting to kill the seeds he planted was about Marley being against her use of birth control during their relationship.
Really?
Supposedly. But according to Marley in writing the song, he wanted to use the phrase, I shot the police, but instead used I shot the sheriff because he thought it'd be less inflammatory. He thought that, you know, the authorities would have created a fuss if he'd said I shot the police. So he decided to use the other phrase to avoid unnecessary issues. So like he was like, I mean, there may have been a metaphor implanted about, you know, some other relationship shit. But I mean, ultimately, the song is, I think, remembered as...
No, you that's know. Dope. That's, I mean, I'm not saying that's dope. I just mean like that trivia is dope.
It's a little piece of trivia. If true, you know. But yeah, that's all we got for this week.
Wasn't there a rap version?
Was there a rap version?
I feel like Warren G. Hold up, let me. Yep. Warren G. did one.
Yeah. Let me hear that real quick.
Can we add an amendment to this?
All right,
Can we add another song? Here, I'm about to post the link in the thing.
Okay.
Here, check this out.
Oh, I remember the shit.
No, you know what? We don't even got it. I'm sorry. I'm going all over the place right now. But, like, we forgot literally the most famous hip-hop song about self-defense.
Yeah.
Warren G's Regulators.
Oh shit.
Like Warren G's Regulators is literally about self-defense.
God damn.
Literally about self-defense. You know what? It's too many, and we have been going for a long time. It's too many songs. Just check out the playlist on the Dope Knife Spotify, and you guys can check out all the songs that we had listed on today and some of the other ones that didn't make the cut, and also past episodes and stuff like that. But yeah, I can't believe I didn't even think about that shit. For some, like, I'm so mad at myself because that should have been the first thing that I said when you said that we should do an episode on self-defense. Man, I'm slipping. Anyway,
you know what doesn't ever slip?
The raps.
The bars.
They never do.
They never do.
Joel, my good sir, can you give us a beat?
Feeling like Brother Malcolm when I'm peeking through the blinds, trying to peer around the street to see who's creeping in the ride. But if it's one of them, I ain't gonna freak and run to hide. I'm finna fight them out of eye until the weaker one has died. And this is why I ain't sleeping in the night. I was thinking that I might have to keep them in my sight and defend my castle from trigger happy assholes in a pinch. But I'd rather be judged by 12 and carried by 6.
Hey, I'm Dope Knife.
Lingua Franca.
Just waiting on reparations.
Like, share, subscribe, bitches.
See you next week.
Peace. Waiting on Reparations is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.